Life of the Messiah, page 106, page 106, Life of the Messiah. Boy, this is going to get interesting with this passage. 106, middle of the page, we're continuing in Luke 16, and we have a lot to flush out on this one. All right, page 106, it's kind of very on the top there, Luke 16, and it says this, Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, and also, you know, they taught that God blesses those with that he loves with money. So that's what they taught. So they were lovers of money. And also, so if you're poor, you weren't blessed of God. That's the idea. That's the mindset. That's basically the health and wealth prosperity gospel that goes on today. It says this, also heard all these things, and they derided him. And so, basically, they derided him because he taught against the Pharisaical teachings on pretty much point by point that everything they had said. Verse 15, and he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your heart, and the heart in their hearts that money was their master. And that's the issue right here. For what is highly esteemed among men, what men or the world value, is an abomination in the sight of God. What were they valuing? Money. And they baptized it by saying God blesses those with money if he loves them. And so those worldly values, God sees as an abomination, he says. The law and the prophets were until John. So John's the catalyst between the old covenant now and then the new covenant. Since that time, the kingdom of God has been preached. And the idea is that when John got here, he started preaching the kingdom of God. It's the gospel kingdom. That, yes, you need to accept Jesus Christ. And if you do, Israel, he will bring the kingdom. That's the kingdom gospel. That has been postponed. The kingdom gospel will eventually be preached in the tribulation, presumably by the 144,000, and it's noted in the Olivet Discourse in Matthew 24 that the gospel kingdom will be preached to all the world. So that's what's being preached at the first coming, obviously, and they've not accepted it. And then he says, everyone is pressing into it. The idea, or you'll see, is violently pressing into it or trying to move into it. What this means is this, that the Pharisees have blinded the people and made so many obstacles to get saved, it becomes a very difficult task to find the truth about how to be saved. They put up barriers and they're blocking access to how to be saved. So it's violently difficult to do it. I can understand this as an ex-Catholic because I couldn't see the gospel. There was all these barriers in front of it for me to see clearly what Jesus had done. And so I understand the barriers. And whatever system you came out of, you can see the barriers that were put in front of Jesus. So you clearly couldn't see the gospel. That's what he means by that. Okay. And it is easier for heaven and earth to pass away for one tittle of the law to fail. And the idea is he's about to fulfill the law all the way to the jot and tittle. And the reason he states this is because they are keeping their traditions and ignoring the law of God. And when they do use the law of God, they misuse it for their own purposes, which he's about to nail them on right now. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced from her husband commits adultery. Boom. He nailed them. He absolutely nails them on that one. That is a major problem that they are having. And again, he is confronting everything that they hold to. Now, okay, what's going on here? There's two schools of thought on what was happening in Jesus' day about divorce and remarriage. Obviously, what was happening in Jesus' day was what we would call serial monogamy. That's what was happening in Jesus' day. Guys were getting divorced. And remember, only men under the Mosaic law can divorce. A woman cannot divorce. A man is the only one that can divorce. That's why a lot of these phrases are termed from the man. Okay? So, what these men were doing is using the liberal Hillel school for divorce, which meant that if you find anything indecent with your wife, you can divorce her. If you find a wife that's a woman that's better looking, you can divorce her for that. If she burns her food, you can divorce her for that. Just whatever you come up with, any indecent thing, you're off to the races, man. And they did this. They did this so much, it was just rampant. You had all these ladies being divorced for all kinds of different reasons. That was the Hillel school. The Shammai school was very narrow. And the Shammai school came down to saying, no, it's got to be for sexual immorality, and that's it. And so what's happening here is Jesus is coming right in the middle of both schools, because they're trying to set him up to see if he'll side with the Shammai school or the Hillel school. And he's not going to side with either of them. He's going to point out to them that both of you are wrong about marriage and divorce. You're both wrong. Okay, so here's where we have to plow down into a little bit of understanding case law in Judaism. This is what gets difficult. The reason he's making this statement is a direct reference to Deuteronomy 24, which we're going to read right now. Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4. It is case law. So if you want to turn there, you can, or just listen. I will read it for you. And this is what the Pharisees are using to make their case about divorce and serial monogamy, basically. And this is where we're going to plow down and learn Jewish case law. Okay, make this note on the side. Deuteronomy 12 through 26 is Jewish case law. Okay? Deuteronomy 12 through 26 is Jewish case law. Now you're going to become a lawyer right now. Okay? As we go into the Mosaic law. Here's the first case law, or one of the case law that the Pharisees are using, and Jesus is telling them you've misinterpreted the case law. When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes, because he has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends it out of his house. When she has departed from his house and goes and becomes another man's wife, here's the protasis in the case law. If, and that's the if right there, the latter husband detests her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand and sends it out of his house, or if the latter husband dies who took her as his wife, here's the apodosis. Then, so you see the if and the then, that's the protasis and the apodosis in case law. Then, her former husband who divorced her must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled. For that is an abomination before the Lord, and you shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance. Now, that's a very difficult case law. That's very difficult. What is going on here? This is not a command. In case law, you are not getting commands. You are getting the idea of, if this happens, here's what you do. Does that make sense? Law is, thus saith the Lord, thou shalt not steal. Okay? That's not case law, that's law. That's the way it is. When you're studying case law in the Mosaic law, you're studying, if this happens, I want you to deal with it this way. It's not a command. Do you see the difference? The Pharisees had taken this as a command rather than case law. Let me give you another example of case law. If you move to chapter 25, verse 11, here's another example of case law just to give you an idea. If two men fight together and the wife of one draws near to rescue her husband from the hand of the one attacking him and puts out her hand and seizes him by the genitals, then you shall cut off her hand. Your eyes shall not pity her. So case law is this. I'm not condoning what is happening, but I know this will happen. And when it does happen, I'm telling you how to handle it, even though I don't condone it. So when two men are fighting And apparently this is a common practice, I guess, in the Middle East, that his wife will come rescue him and grab the other man's genitals. You're going to cut her hand off for grabbing his genitals for that. Let me give you another case law. Back up to chapter 23. And let me make the point to you again that it's not condoned, but it's understood that this might happen. And I want you to deal with this, Moses and Israel, when this does happen. In chapter 23, it says this in verse 17, "There shall be no ritual harlot of the daughters of Israel or perverted one of the sons of Israel." And here's the case law. "You shall not bring the wages of a harlot or the price of a dog to the house of the Lord your God for any of vowed offering, for both of these are an abomination to the Lord your God." Okay, so here's case law. Don't you dare bring money from a harlot or the price of a dog and give me that as an offering. Don't you dare do that. Because if you do, that's an abomination, and I'm not going to accept it. If two men are fighting and one gal grabs his genitals, her hand is to be cut off. That's how you're to handle it. Okay, so here's in case law what he's trying to say. He is not saying, "I'm approving you guys going to harlots." He's just saying, "I know it's going to happen. I know men will go to harlots. And if that happens, this is what I want done. I know men will fight. I am not condoning that men should have a cage match in Israel's camp and you guys duke it out. And the only rules I'm giving you is that the women can't get involved in grabbing each other like that, grabbing the men's genitals." That's not what he's saying at all. He's saying, "I'm assuming that men are going to fight. I'm assuming men are going to go to harlot." Doesn't mean I'm condoning it, but I'm not. I'm God and I know what's going to happen. I also know that people are not going to listen to me about divorce and remarriage. Therefore, Moses, when this happens, and I know it will, because the Israeli men will come up with the idea that something short of adultery, which if the woman committed adultery, what would happen to her according to Deuteronomy 22? Stoned to death. So we're not talking about that. The only allowance that you could remarry is death or adultery, and adultery meant stoning. But he is saying, "I understand that people are going to disobey me and go ahead and draw up certificates of divorce and divorce their wives, despite what I tell them to do. But Moses, in order to counteract this, I'm giving you a procedure of how to deal with this when it does go down." That's called case law. Does that make sense? Okay. It is not God condoning that you can write a certificate of the divorce anytime you want to remarry if you find something unclean about the woman. Now, we have no idea. I have studied this passage in Deuteronomy ad infinitum. I have read scholarly papers on it, and no one knows what he's talking about. Because, and I think why, what is this uncleanness? It's something short of adultery. It's something sexual that the woman does, and the idea is unveiling herself. Whatever, it's short of sexual adultery. There's theories of incest that the guy finds out he's married to his sister or some type of cousin, and because of incest, he has the right to divorce her because this is a close relative. There's all kinds of theories behind this. We don't know. But the point about it is this, that the guys are going to make up stuff about their wives and say there's something wrong with her. She can't produce children. She's incestuous. She's doing things weird sexually, and I'm going to get rid of her. She's not doing something for me. And I'm going to write her a certificate of divorce. She's going to get remarried. And so Moses is saying she will get remarried, and what I am forbidding is that she get remarried after the second marriage, because by getting married a second time, she has defiled herself, and the guy has defiled himself. How so? What is the defilement? Because he tells in Deuteronomy that, where is it at? She is an abomination because she is defiled. It means that because she was illegally divorced and she went to another guy and got married, the sex act defiled her. She's now committed adultery. And because of that, I am forbidding her to remarry her previous husband if that guy should die or get or send her a certificate of divorce because he hates her. Now you're thinking, well, I don't get that, the remarrying of the previous husband. I don't get that. A lot of people don't get that. But I think it has to do with the dowries that were involved here. There's a financial concept involved here. So follow me on this. When a man married a gal, he received a dowry from the family to marry her. And he kept that dowry. If he writes a certificate of divorce, he's going to have to give that dowry back to her. What was happening, presumably, that the Israeli men were sending out divorces but keeping the dowries. And, okay, so then she goes out and marries another guy. Well, he dies. She has his financial fortune with him. And it prevented her from remarrying the same guy that she was previously married to because now it's an act of stealing, basically, by bringing her newfound riches from this second marriage back with the first marriage. And so these guys, apparently, and again, this is apparently, the Israeli men were figuring out that I can divorce her, she can remarry, he dies or gets or sends her out, I can get her back and I have more money, the second marriage, from her. So they were enriching themselves in some weird form or fashion. Perhaps. Perhaps. The point about this is, they're using case law to say, when they fight with Jesus in Matthew 8, 19, well, you state this, but Moses said that we could write a certificate of divorce anytime we wanted to if we found anything unclean in our wives. You're contradicting Moses. And what did Jesus say back to them about that? Moses permitted you to do this. Basically, Moses was giving you case law, and you're turning case law into law, and you're wrong. And let me tell you what that case law meant. If you divorce for any unbiblical reason, you will become an adulterer, and so will your wife. And anyone who marries your wife or you after that wedding, after that marriage, are an adulterer as well. That's what that case law was saying. End of story. Pharisees, the school of Hillel and the school of Shammai, you're both wrong. You're using a case law to give you the ability to divorce and practice serial monogamy, and I'm not going for that. That would be like saying, well, the case law about two guys fighting, you know, about that gal, God must allow fighting between men. Or God said, not to give, he doesn't take harlot money, so he must be permitting us to visit harlots. You see the logic they were doing? It's a legal loophole using case law, not law. And Jesus nailed them on that. And he says, no, 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 you guys totally got this wrong. I'm telling you, it has nothing to do with the way you're interpreting it. What Jesus took them back to is the original law. The original law is when you marry a person and you have a sex act with that person, you are now become one, and that oneness doesn't go away even when you divorce. You carry that oneness with your other relationships. Wait, oh, that's a different story. Adultery and death break the marriage covenant. So it's off the hook. Those are the two exceptions that's when the marriage covenant ends and the oneness stops. Paul, that's one of the loopholes. Well, my counselor said he's emotionally abandoned me and he's an unbeliever or she's an unbeliever, so I can get off the hook. I said, not with the Lord. You're nailed. And then the idea, I've heard this one from counselors too, tell people, except for porneia, that's what Jesus uses in the Greek, or the writer of Matthew, to give the idea of what Jesus was talking about. Porneia was used, but it wasn't, there's another word used for adultery. And they'll say, well, Jesus didn't use the word adultery. He used the word porneia. And I say, yeah, I know, because he was trying to hit a more broader perspective than just a man or a woman committing adultery. When Jesus used porneia, guess what he was including? That when someone acts in a homosexual, lesbian, bestiality, or adultery, or harlot, or prostitute, or whatever, then that's what gets you off the hook. That's what breaks the bond. So it's interesting that I've even heard counselors try to finagle. Well, he didn't use the word adultery, and they've committed adultery or whatever. And it's just bizarre what they try to do and wiggle through the words. The other thing I've heard is, well, if they've obviously lusted after other women. So they've committed adultery in your mind, so therefore you can divorce them because they've committed adultery in their mind. I said, your counselor told you that? And I said, if that was the case, my whole church would be divorced. I said, what are you talking about? I mean, people lust. That's just normal for humans. It's a sin. But if that was the exception clause, then everyone would be divorced. It's pornea. I said, you're right. Jesus said, and you look on a woman with lust, that's committing adultery in your heart. But that is not a reason to get divorced. Amen. That's not. It's pornea, which means I do a physical sexual act outside the marriage physically with another human being or an animal or a prostitute or a homosexual or lesbian, and I do the physical act. It's not happening in my head. It's not a fantasy. It's not pornography. Because I've even heard some counselors say, well, if they're into pornography, you can divorce them. No, you can't. Because if that was the case, then everyone would be divorced because of lust. I said, it's not even pornography. I told the gal, a guy or a gal could lust even being blind. They can lust without having eyes. Think about that. They can lust for money. They can lust for power. They can even lust for sex. Even without seeing. It's not about the physical sight. It's about committing the physical act. And why does the physical act break the issue? Break the bond. Because it breaks the oneness of the first physical act in the bonds of marriage of the sex act that created the two shall become one. And that's not to be touched. Because when you include other people, Paul said, when you have sex with a prostitute, you're becoming one with that person and bringing that person into your bedroom, basically. So now you have a polygamous relationship going on here. And so that's what's causing the problem. So the loopholes, my friends, are out there. And many Christian counselors are giving loopholes that don't exist, just like the Pharisees did. It's sad, really sad. You see why in Israel, when they took this seriously, they had matchmakers. Because even today, the Jews will say, this is too important of a decision for my kids to make because they don't know what they're doing. And they make it for them because they say, my kid doesn't know what they're doing and I don't want them marrying somebody because we understand the stipulations involved in the biblical text. Even in the Jewish context, without the New Testament, it's very strict. Very strict. And they know that. And that's why they still, in some circles in Judaism, have matchmakers still. Because kids don't know what they're doing. They just fall in love with, hey, yeah, that person showed me some attention and some emotion. I love them. It's a joke. And they get married to the wrong person, and then you know how that ends.